hello, everyone.
Hey.
This is episode 8. Happy February. Happy Black History Month. All that. D-Mac, give me all that.
Yeah, it's your boy, Man of My Do.
That's Antoine. And if you did not know, I am Sindel. And I'm super excited this month because I got the grand pleasure of giving you guys a glimpse of my personal library. And I was able to bless you all with 4 particular essays that I like especially. And I know that you guys are probably reading it and it's like, why is one like the other? Or how are you going to connect these two? But I promise that I will. So,
A pinky promise.
And Antoine, I'm letting you know now, I'm going to take a little bit of control because these are my absolute favorites.
Yo, do your thing, shorty.
Okay. All right. So, the 2 readings that we're supposed to have this, like, session is Steve Biko, We Blacks, and The Characteristics of Negro Expression by Zora Neale Hurston. How'd you like the readings, Toyn?
Honestly, they were a tad dry. But they're essays, so, like, they're not meant to entertain, they're meant to inform.
Right, I guess, whatever, but...
No disrespect.
Whatever.
Like, I appreciate your literary prowess and your eye.
Whatever, y'all, he's hating, because he'll rather play video games or something, but...
I mean, 2K is lit. I'm nice.
So, let me begin with Steve Biko. So, particularly with this text, I also want y'all to know that I studied in South Africa and I studied his works amongst other South African like thought leaders. So this is kind of sort of like my alley. And if you did not know, Steve Biko was one of the leading people or like thought leaders in South Africa during apartheid. He died in prison where he was captured, and this is where he wrote some or majority of his essays, amongst others, and he kind of sort of birthed the whole idea of Black consciousness. And I thought that this text would be more important simply because right now we're living in this world where we've hit the lowest points of, like, American political, historical views. And this man literally lays out the idea or like the blueprint of like what it is to be like conscious. And he's saying this from like a Afrocentric type of view, like only Africans can view this way. But I feel like this is so important for us now because we're dealing with so much knowledge and so much facts and sometimes alternative facts. And so he starts, if you didn't know, he starts about how, like, the world is changing and, like, you know, nothing can really justify, like, the wrongdoings of what society has come to. Like, I think he even says in one, like, part of his text, nothing can justify the arrogant assumption that a clique of foreigners has the right to decide on the lives of a majority.
That sounds real familiar.
I'm gonna just let y'all sit on that. And so he talks about, like, almost like the mental kickback that one receives when they've realized that, like, this is some BS. This is some total BS. I don't know how we've gotten here, and I don't know how these few people decided that they can run an entire population of people. And then he goes on and he says, one should not waste time here dealing with manifestations of material want of the Black people. So now he's basically talking about how, like, we've realized that these people are doing really wrong things. We also realize that we're in a messed up situation, but now it's time for us to change our situation. And then in the text, he says something that is like, it's almost like a head on to every Black person almost in America and almost worldwide watching what's actually happening to the crash of America. He says, all in all, the Black man has become a shell, a shadow of a man completely defeated, drowning in his own misery, a slave, an ox bearing the yoke of oppression with sheepish timidity. And that's interesting because it's almost like, obviously, he isn't talking about like the Black man specifically. He's talking about the Black people or like the black community, but it's like we've become defeated. And we feel like everything that we talked about in the past and everything that we will want to do, we almost feel like we can't. We feel the pressures of the world simply because of things happening. And something that's super interesting with this is he hits it to the lowest point, almost like reflective of how we are at the lowest points of our lives here. So that statement to me kind of like, I don't know, it mirrors each other, right? So it's like while we're at the lowest stage of our lives, like, psychologically, we're also at the lowest stage of our lives. But then he hits us with this, like, it's not over, right? So then at the bottom of that page, he says, a people without a positive history is like a vehicle without an engine. And so then he starts talking about more and more things, and he basically lays out, like, a whole entire blueprint of what it is to be, like, conscious. So then he talks about, there's like a small poem at the end, and then I'm going to wrap Biko up because I want to go directly into Zora Neale. You can come in whenever you feel like it. I feel like I'm taking the mic too much.
Nah, I mean, you're killing it, though. So I'm just watching you work.
Okay. And so then, like, the last page, he gives us this small, like, I guess like a small poem. And it says, and this is so pertinent to why Zora Neale is so connected to this text specifically, and I'm going to read it. To take part in the African Revolution, it is not enough to write a revolutionary song. You must fashion the revolution with the people. And if you fashion it with the people, the songs will come by themselves and of themselves. In order to achieve real action, you must yourself be a living part of Africa, of her thought. You must be an element of that popular energy which is entirely called forth for the freeing, the progress, and the happiness of Africa. There is no place outside that fight for the artist or for the intellectual who is not himself concerned with and completely at one with the people in the great battle of Africa and of suffering humanity.
Mic drop.
That's how I feel right now.
He was like, yo, you want to rap about oppression? I mean, you got to go through it.
Right.
Man. Like,
right.
That's the best one. You want to rap about what's going on in America? Go to one of these marches, see what it's like on the front lines, and you don't got to worry about writing. It'll write itself. That's a dope concept.
Yeah, and it's basically the idea of...
I dig it.
No, I love it. And he was so spot on. Despite the fact that he had an entire page about, like, black religion, I'm not going to talk about that at all today.
Well, of course.
Because we can go into it. And even when I was in South Africa studying him, like, it just made me question who I was as a person spiritually. But that's a whole nother story.
Who are you as a person spiritually?
I am the great Moses. I'm joking. So then this idea of black consciousness then becomes, after the rage and anger is over, now it's time for you to be practical about your inner thoughts and what you should do to move forward.
Word. Like, you had your time to be sad. Now let's get to work.
And I think it's now the most relevant thing to do. We are all angry about what's going on, people. I get it. I understand. However, it's time for us to actually channel these thoughts and these feelings into some real work. We don't need people only marching. We don't need people only at the voting booths. We don't need only people doing economic things. We don't need people only doing political things and helping policy and, like, lobbying and stuff. We need all different fashions. All of it must move and all of it must work at the same time to continue to resist. And that's what he's saying. He's saying, like, listen, I get that you're angry, y'all, but there's a reason for doing this. And even so, he didn't, I'm going to go a little bit for, I told you I wasn't going to continue talking about him, but this is so good.
Talk your talk.
He then even talks about, like, who we are genetically as people. And he's just saying, like, the easiness with which Africans communicate with each other is not forced by authority, but it is inherent in the makeup of African people, right? He's saying these are characteristics we must not allow ourselves to lose. He's basically saying the very same thing that we were born with or we are as people, we shouldn't lose them in the resistance simply because it's going to allow us to resist more. That's all he's saying. He's saying this idea of black consciousness is not one that's new. It's not one that, you know, had to be, like, acquired.
It doesn't have to be compartmentalized.
Right. It's simply something that we have, and we need to be practical about it. We need to be strategic about it. And Tell me if this is not one of the greatest things to read in the brink of Black History Month during a time that everyone feels like they need to be resistant.
Word.
So now we get to the point where he's talking about practical realities, right? And so he's basically saying that, like, you know, this is the blueprint. This is what we should be in order for us to be successful in the movement. But then Zora is actually telling us that these characteristics about what Steve Biko is talking about, it plays on to who we are as, like, Black people in the result of our expression, right? So she even says in the beginning of the text, now moving forward, if this
hey,
is okay.
I see you.
Again, Antoine, just jump in whenever you like.
I'm going to jump in on Zora. She said some things.
Yeah, and I actually want to go through each characteristic and kind of sort of compare it to, like, the modern day of what we do, right? And so I'm going to leave off again. I'm sorry. I got to go back to Biko. He says again, and I'm going to say this one more time, a people without a positive history is like a vehicle without an engine. This positive history that Zora is talking about in this vehicle, yeah. I'm sorry, that Biko is talking about is the characteristics that Zora is talking about. So without these characteristics, we don't have no type of, like, positive vehicle for us to continue to move.
That reminded me of James Baldwin when he said that, like, a people, yeah, you know, I'm relating stuff.
What?
So how, like, James Baldwin, how he was shocked when he went to Paris, mm-hmm. because the blacks had something to hold on to, because
right.
their country had, like, a rich history that wasn't based on their detriment.
Right.
Like, even Black people in America who are, there's no end to the slave era, like,
mm-hmm.
they've done research, that pain can be moved on genetically, like, our struggle is in our blood, literally,
right.
on our skin, literally.
And I mean, honestly, look, I don't want to say this, and I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but people are out here wilding out like it's literally the end of the world. Like, a Cyclops is finna, like, come right. down back to earth and, like, slay us all. And I feel like the people who are most kind of sort of calm and collective are the people who go through this kind of resistance every day. And I don't want to say, like, you know, we were born to do this, because we do also have feelings and we are also human too. And we do feel that things are kind of effed up. However, his argument is we've always done this and we were built for this. So anything that's coming our way we already allowed it to happen to us and we're right. good. I mean, like, what's the worst that could happen? Yeah, slavery already happened.
True. I get reminded a lot that, like, I sometimes, not romanticize, but I for lack of a better word, I would say sometimes I romanticize struggle where, like, I hate when, I told you about the time I was in the conversation with two Caucasoids at Rowan, and they were talking about this, like, house and, like, how it had, like,
right.
glass walls. Like, and I'm like, y'all ain't never had cereal for dinner, have y'all?
Mm.
Like, I just be looking at them and, like, I was talking about today at lunch.
And this, again, plays on to privilege
yeah,
as well. Because,
like,
I mean, there is, of course, like, Caucasoids. I can't believe you said this, and I can't believe I said it back. There is people who are not of color, who've experienced
struggle,
who experienced poverty. However, in this intersectionality world that we live in, and this whole race bait that we play onto,
true.
There's always going to be privilege when it comes to skin pigmentation.
Hello.
Right?
Hello.
So, characteristics. Because this is what Zora is telling us, right? So Zora Neale Hurston, I love her. Shout out to her. I'm going to tell y'all a little something personal. I'm actually writing my thesis for me to graduate for my master's in English literature on Zora Neale Hurston.
Hey.
So she is currently, like, my kindred mother. I read her a lot. And I just discovered that Zora Neale Hurston is such a trickster. She's such a trickster with her words. She loves to code switch, which I love so much about her. She's extremely intelligent. And if no one else knows how to tell a story, Zora Neale does.
Oh, Zora could tell a story.
What? Oh, man.
What were their eyes watching?
God.
Hello.
That was the only thing their eyes were watching, actually. So, yeah. So Steve Biko, he talked about, you know, that positive history and, like, all of that cool stuff. And then, like, even our last episode, Antoine, when we was talking about Black art, each characteristic that Zora talked about, we played on to a bigger text of what we do now currently in Black art, right?
Facts.
So these characteristics are culture, customs, and shared experiences all together.
Yeah, we did talk a lot about shared experiences.
Yeah. culture, customs, shared experiences. One where we all got hyped again about when one of the moms from the new edition told him, ooh, can't you see me on the damn phone, as if all our moms has not said that to us at least once in either our adolescent or adult years. I think my mom now to this day tells me in Spanish and in broken English, can't you see me on the damn phone? So again, shared experiences, my customs, traditions, cultures, all of that stuff kind of coincides with each other, right? So the first one that she talks about is drama. And she talks about the idea that because words are language and oftentimes language has barriers, and language is actually a shared, like, ideology. Like, you have to know language in order to play it to your defense. She's making the argument that language never worked for the Negro to express properly. Actions always worked well with Negroes to express properly, simply because we've always had language stripped from us. So we can't completely express how we feel with the language that we gave us, that they gave us. And to play on to that more, if we are experts in the language, we still have a disconnect with the different types of people that we run into because everyone doesn't know and understand the language or languages like we do know. But instead, we always move in a way or we have some type of action. And then if you think about it, like, think about the resistance. By the way, y'all, Haji is here while we're recording. Shout out to Haji. Shout out to Urban One Radio. Those are our home-based people, so shout out to them. And so when we talk about action, think about how much what we do during the resistance. If it's not drama, if it's not art, if it's not dance, if we aren't expressing ourselves in those ways, we've always been resisting. Right, Antoine?
Of course.
Okay. Do you have something to say
about
this?
Look at our hair. How many times you've been sitting on the floor Sunday night in tears? Your hair just resisting that comb.
Number two, the will to adorn. I'm not doing this with Antoine. Last episode was too turnt. I came here with a different character. I came here with Jesus, most importantly. Hey. And I'm not doing this with you, Antoine, because my lungs hurted after we left here because I was laughing so hard at you. I'm letting you know that.
Adorn is one of my favorite words. I think it's one of the most, like, beautiful words.
Explain.
I don't know, like, some, like, I'm a words guy. Okay. And
so you are what Zora Neale talks about, one of those people who is an expert of the language and the idea of words.
I mean, I'm quite nimble. But that's what I really liked about this. Like, she talked about how nimble, like, the black man was inherently with language. Mm. Like, that's super duper dope. But the word adorn, like when I write poetry, now that I'm working on my book, shameless plug, it ain't coming out no time soon.
Oh, wow.
Like, I think about, like, how does your mouth move when you read this? So, like, the adorn just has, like, a good mouth to it.
Okay. And it's interesting enough that you talked about poems because, like, when she talked about the will to adorn, it's broken down into poetry.
Oh, yeah.
So, that's awesome, Antoine. I'm glad that you made that connection. The will to adorn. So, then, when she started talking about she said here, but the Negro's greatest contribution to the language is one, the use of metaphors and similes, and two, the use of double descriptives, and three, the use of verbal nouns. I immediately began
those
to
double descriptives.
So let me get at it. I specifically thought about the African American English vernacular, one that people try to mimic, and she talks about mimic and imitation in here. I don't want to touch too much on it yet, but my Philly folks.
Hey.
What is a John? A John is a noun.
A John is a everything.
Exactly. Double descriptives. Lit.
Word.
Lit can be anything, right?
Yeah.
Bad. Bad can be both bad and good. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, that's bad, bad.
So it's again, this shared experience that we all have, right?
Even when we don't know somebody, like, yo, you know Kenneth?
Kenneth who? Kenneth.
The Kenneth that's the most Kenneth.
Right. It's not hot in here. It's hot. It's not that cold. I mean, the party was jumping. It wasn't jumping, but it was like, it was jumping. It was okay.
I'm married, but I ain't married.
Wow. So again, that's the shared experience that we can all basically say that we know. No one actually told us that this was a law. It wasn't like in a policy or anything, but we kind of just did it. And that's what she's saying. We're expressing ourselves in these like real crazy inherited like type of ways that no one actually showed us. Like, honestly, think about it. Who showed us to, when we were younger, like, eat and swallow milk? Like, who taught us how to, like, actually, like, you know, use the bathroom? Who showed us this stuff?
I think...
Who showed us... okay, you need to have a clean mind when I'm talking about this.
Like, these analogies are just a little far, because, like, inherently, like, if someone taught us...
Right.
We would know, we would still know how to eat. That's inherent.
Right, okay. However,
who told us how to make them little S's we used to make in elementary school?
Oh, no.
with the point top and the point bottom. Like, those S's was everywhere. I do not remember learning how to make those.
Or who?
You know they found them internationally? Like, kids in France doing that. Like, who was the first one to make the S?
You got
to
do the three, and you got to do the three underneath. Yeah, the three, and then you got to connect them the diagonally.
And then I used to get bored and make one, but instead of three lines, I'd make like seven. I'm like, this just isn't a shape anymore.
Ladies, who taught us how to do the box and make the lighthouse on our lanyards?
The lighthouse at summer, was hard. I couldn't do it.
The lighthouse was the easiest one.
I had
one.
Fat fingers. The folding? Nah, I was more of a knotter.
Okay. Number three. This goes right in. Angularity, like the idea of angles. And we talked about this last episode. And I just love the fact that her, like, I guess her passage kind of coincides with it kind of theorizes what we were talking about so loosely last episode about black art. So do you remember when we were talking about Moonlight and we were talking about Fences and we were talking about Hidden Figures? And we all said, and Selma, we were talking about Selma and even Birth of a Nation, how we enjoyed the aesthetics of the movie simply because it showed us different angles, and those angles kind of like coincide with like perspectives. She wrote an entire characteristic of how black people will love angles more than straight lines. Tell me that's not crazy.
That's crazy.
That's some real stuff. Okay.
That's lit. It's funny because this is weird. On the way here, I was writing, and I made a line where I'm comparing a woman to a church.
Okay.
So.
Oh, you're about to get real deep, y'all.
I'm not. I promise I'm not. I'm not even going to read, like, an excerpt or nothing like that. Like, so, it's just like, when you said, like, we like angles more than straight lines, mm-hmm. It just reminds me of, like, the black woman. Like, even the petite black woman. Like.
Right.
And I was thinking, like, yeah, it was just talking about, like, the curves of, like, a cathedral compared mm-hmm. to, like, the curves of a woman. But, yeah.
And she says this. Anyone watching Negro dancers will be struck by the same phenomenon. Every posture is another angle. Pleasing, yes, but in effect achieved by the very means which an European strives to avoid. So, again, like, our
like
angles.
Like whining?
Yes. And twerking?
Yes. How many angles is in a percolator?
Yo, turn this off.
Per foot.
Turn this off. And then
I can make about 36 angles with my left foot when the percolator comes in. At least.
So I was trying to make the argument that angles is also a form of resistance, but Antoine is really playing today, and I did not want to do this again. Do y'all remember that video?
You never mean bug somebody in a basement party and then percolate to come on and then y'all face each other in the circle and whoever percolate better wins?
How many angles can you Wu-Tang to?
Don't get me started.
Bruh, that's mad 45, 43, 60. You know when you do the wind up?
Yeah.
That's a complete 360.
True. I hit a 108 one time, man. No. I'm going to blow up my elbow.
So, asymmetry is the next one. I feel like I'm saying that word wrong.
Asymmetry.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. So, this is what I thought about when I thought about asymmetry. If I'm in church, right, and the music is vibing out, right, and you see that one lady get up and start clapping. But then it's another lady, right? She like, I love Jesus more than her. And she start clapping.
That's why they clap. Hey. Okay.
And then everybody just doing a different type of clap, but it's all in unison.
Listen, if you want to do the double clap, the Christian double clap, you got to be trained in that. Don't try right. that. Don't try your first double clap on Easter Sunday. You're going to get embarrassed, all
right? By the dude in the green suit yeah, on the right.
Like, come on now. You start at Bible studies during the double clap, and you work your way up to Sunday service.
I'm
saying it's a lot of people messing up the vibe
with the
unpracticed double claps. Because if you don't time it perfect, you're going to end up off beat.
And then at the end, it's just the big lady on the
everything.
Side that come up with the tambourine, and she just killed your whole clap. Because now she got the tambourine going off.
And you messing up her tempo because she going off the clap.
And she going to turn and look at you with that right lazy eye. And then you guys couldn't. Okay. So I wanted to read this characteristic of asymmetry, right? So, and like, I almost got chills in my body the first time I read this because it's so true. Asymmetry is a definite feature of Negro art. I have no samples of true Negro painting unless we count the African shields, but the sculpture and carvings are full of this beauty and lack of symmetry. It is present in the literature, both prose and verse. I offer an example of this quality in verse from Langston Hughes. Shout out to Langston Hughes.
Shout out to Langston.
No, for real. He used to chill on the steps of my current graduate school, so shout out to him. I also found out that Langston Hughes used to chill in Plainfield in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. So shout out to them. I love me some Harlem Renaissance people. Y'all don't understand. So this is what he says. I ain't gonna mistreat my good gal anymore. I'm not gonna kill her next time she makes me sore. I treat her kind, but she don't do me right. She fights and quarrels most every night. And then it goes on.
That's
again. I'm done, and I'm going to continue reading because I can't deal with him today. It is the lack of symmetry which makes Negro dancing so difficult for white dancers to learn. The abrupt and unexpected changes, the frequent change of key and time are evidences of this quality in music. The dancing of the justly famous Bojangles and Snake Hips are excellent examples. And then this is what slayed me. The presence of rhythm and lack of symmetry are paradoxical, but they are there. Both are present to a marked degree. There is always rhythm, but it is the rhythm of segments. Each unit has a rhythm of its own, but when the whole is assembled, it is lacking in symmetry. But easily workable for a Negro who is accustomed to the break in going from one part to another so that he adjusts himself to the new tempo. Now, I have to unpack this text.
Unpack it.
Because this paragraph isn't talking about just dance and being asymmetrical. It's talking about assimilation in the different types of ways that we have to maneuver around society to get where we need to get.
And also how everyone's perplexed, like how, like, oh, they're like, she's like, why do people can't do the dances we do? What do they do? They over-sexualize them. They demonize them. Look at Crumpy, and they're like, oh, what is this mess? Like, let them express themselves, Reggie.
But it's not even that. It's just the idea that asymmetry is not only for Negro expression, but it's also for Negro, like, in order for us to live, we have to be asymmetrical, not only in dance form, but in societal form, too. So while the average person is working one job to feed all the kids in their houses, the Negro is working 3 and 4 jobs, oftentimes missing basketball games and PTO meetings to make things work. We've always been in asymmetrical spaces, and this is why we've always been able to overcome, because we've grown in being asymmetrical. Am I right or am I right?
Right. It's just like, how many rappers have we seen not be able to ascend because they want to be in the streets? They're trying to be equal famous and equal streets. And what happens with that is you end up all streets. You need to be asymmetric with your ascension.
So ideally, then they'll be just symmetrical. They wouldn't be asymmetrical because now they're trying to do both things that kind of can coincide in each other, but it will always fail because it's not meshing correctly.
Yeah, so the symmetry of them trying to do both is detrimental to their ascension.
And I agree with you is what I'm saying.
Oh, bet. I thought you needed clarity.
No, you need clarity.
Oh, I need Claritin.
You know, dancing is the fifth characteristic. Obviously, again, we spoke about this already, so yeah.
True, I like to move it.
Negro folklore is the sixth characteristic. And it's just the idea that we are forever storytelling, forever rewriting, and forever reliving our own experiences, right?
Yeah. Just like last week when I was about to tell you a story, then I realized it wasn't my story.
Oh, yes. It was somebody else. So it was plagiarism.
Not only was it somebody else, it was somebody that didn't exist. It was something I saw on TV. And not even something I saw on TV recently. Like, it was so many components to this. I was just
y'all,
like,
we was cracking I'm up in the car.
We live in someone else's life right now.
Nah, but, like, think about even, like, the storytelling tradition and how, like, again, this goes back to the idea that because we didn't have language that can, like, talk to everyone, we had expression. And just think about all of, like, this, and I'm using, like, really hyper quotes right now, the air quotes, like, storytelling situations from generation to generation to generation. That's the idea of storytelling. And nowadays, people call themselves storytellers because they're trying to, like, you know, relive and rewrite and understand the experience that they're currently having. So, yeah, that's Negro folklore. And then cultural heroes. I'm just going to put my literary background to this. Zora Neale Hurston is, again, a trickster because she's playing on to this idea of Euripides. If you guys don't read classic literature, just don't.
Euripides is nothing you want to waste
your time. No, not at all. And this is why I always tell y'all, don't do it, I'll do it for y'all. And she just talks about, like...
Ain't that a black woman for you?
Woo!
Well, let me take on this burden of literature for you so you could sit up.
And be ignorant?
Talk about it.
Right.
Not ignorant, because once we're done, I mean, they know. The knowledge is out there.
I think you got a point. You might be on to something, for real, this time.
You are the mother nursing through knowledge her children.
I feel like we need, like, a chichimba in here so I could, like, hit the drums. No? That's too much?
You real specific with your drums.
I need that.
I'm not trained on the chichimba. Can we get some bongos? A snare?
So, yeah, cultural heroes, it was, I guess, right? I think it's also, it plays onto the idea that, again, wow, that one person can actually rest with the burden of, like, understanding something so that they can be the person who, like, breaks the ceiling or, like, cracks the ceiling so someone else can come up and break the entire ceiling. And we just spoke about this when I just said, don't let me read it. I mean, don't let you guys read it because I'll read it for you. Mm-hmm. That's, like, really a cultural. Look how we're playing on into Zora's stuff. Right. So much text and so much application, I tell ya. Woo! So, originality was the eighth characteristic. And I think my favorite line in this text was, it is his treatment of the borrowed material. So, if we look squarely, the Negro is a very original being. So, she talks about this idea that people believe somehow that the Negro has, like, taken some type of, like, culture from someone else to create their own culture. This, obviously, as we know, is not true. In fact, we were the originals. So, ideally, if we are the originals of anything and everything, then the third party obviously took it from the first party, right? And then she goes back and she talks about imitation, and she's saying that we didn't actually imitate cultures, but the fact that we can imitate cultures is a talent in itself.
Facts.
You're just going to say facts all the time?
No, only when you say facts. If you're not saying facts, I won't say facts.
So then I'm saying alternative facts. That was a little joke. It wasn't that too funny, though.
Yeah, it was real little.
It was a little dry. So, yeah, she says mimicry is an art in itself. So she's basically saying, like, the talent of imitating someone else is an art. Okay. But it's not,
how
like...
How many singers did we fall in love with because they did covers of other people's stuff?
Right. Right. How many times have we laughed at, like, comedians because they can imitate other people that we know?
True. How many times have we laughed at our cousin because he imitated our uncle?
Yesterday.
Exactly. Like, all the time. Like, we love it.
Oh, man. And then the absence of the concept of privacy.
Unpack that.
So, black people is innately a people of collectivistic ideology. So everything that we had was always shared, and it was always communal, and it was always tribal. And because of that, obviously, if you're too close to a person, or if you're always in a room, or if you're always in a village, you also know who the person is, what they read, what they don't read, what they like, what they don't like. If they cheating on a husband, if they married to somebody else, if they pregnant, you know everything. So this idea of being like a person of individualistic ideology, where you're trying to be by yourself and work up the ladder by yourself, is non-existent in Negro expression, because that's not who we are as people.
What?
You're not very talkative today, Antoine. No, is it something that I said?
No, you're killing it right now, and so it's making me self-conscious. Because, like, this is some really, like, deep stuff. Like, I'm really just sitting here just, like, being a whole, like, SpongeBob. Like,
but you
soaking it all in.
But you told me in the car that everything was, it was boring. That's what you told me.
Yeah,
about my favorite essays that I put on the line.
Sorry,
like, I put my life on the line for you, Antoine.
I've been doing reading peer review research since, like, 2012. Mm. And if I never see another PDF printed out...
So your issue is you just don't like the... My thing was, I didn't want you guys to buy the books.
Of course. Oh, yeah. I mean...
That is...
It beats the alternative every
it's
time.
It's too costly.
But even if that was in a book, it's just like... It just reminded me of, like, graduate school.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, if you guys are feeling like that, too. However... I mean, if you're feeling like that,
now.
Too, it's fine. However, I just feel like this... And this is what I wanted to do in February, because while everyone is talking about, like, great blacks, and like, oh my God, Martin Luther King, and all like that really whitewashed, like, black community.
They don't whitewash Martin Luther King.
What? You don't think so?
Oh, yeah.
Every white person can always say Martin Luther King did not die for this, as if, A, he committed suicide,
true.
And y'all didn't
he
kill
didn't
him.
He didn't die for anything.
Right.
He was murdered for
they,
y'all.
He was walking to the next room and he died. He didn't die for you, number one. And number two, they believe that, like, this whole, like, you know, it's not based on the color of your skin, but the content of your character. BS is the only thing he talked about. Please remember, family and friends, that his last speech, he talked about how he was so fed up about nonviolence. And then he died. And please remember that, like, prior to all of this, Coretta Scott King got phone calls all the time. Listen, we about to blow your husband's head off. Every day. If y'all didn't watch Selma, I'm telling y'all, it's also in there as well, too.
Coretta should have just had letters. She should have turned that phone off. After the third person telling me they're going to come my husband, I'm like, I don't need no phone no more.
Can you imagine the mental traumatization of one who answers the phone thinking that her husband finna call, and it's somebody else telling them about how they going
to
get their husband?
Or she has to answer every call because it might be the call that says her husband's already dead.
See, you know something? I was just trying to make a point, and it shouldn't have gotten this far. We should have just made the point, and that was that.
I'm just saying.
And this is my thing about Black History Month.
Oh, speaking of Martin Luther King, you know they're making a movie about his secretary, right? Not his secretary. The
mistress?
The council. The council, the dude, his right-hand man, who was gay. Who
Byron Rustin!
Yeah, they're making a movie about him.
So people say that the modern-day Byron Rustin is D-Ray, and I don't know how I feel about that. I think I'm tired.
I think that's a little... I think they just trying to, like, put apples with apples. It's different
right.
type. You got to put the Red Delicious with the Red Delicious.
Right,
like,
right, right.
Like, oh, he's black, right. gay, and an activist. He
right.
must be just like D-Ray.
Right, and D-Ray, if you're listening, I love you as a community organizer, as an activist. I just feel like my main argument, my main concern is we need to stop comparing people to our ancestors.
I just think it's unfair.
No, it is. These people died... for some good causes, granted, and of course we can follow their leads, but to continue to call black, like, writers, for example, black male art writers, James Baldwin, is super duper disrespectful to all of the work that James Baldwin put out. To continue to, she's the modern day Toni Morrison. First off, Toni Morrison ain't even dead. What are you actually saying? Shut up. We both got pissed.
Why everybody got to be the next this? Why can't some new stuff happen?
Why can't D-Ray just be D-Ray? Why does he have to be Bayard Rustin? Do you know? Because I don't know.
I don't know.
But again, this is why I wanted these essays to be out, because this is laying literally the groundwork of Negro expression of black consciousness in this episode, and then the next episode, what it is to be a black man and what it is to be a black woman. What does black manhood look like? What does black womanhood look like? What is the plight? That's the structure and the foundation of what black people is and what black community is. And for us to continue to use these whitewashed, like, blacktivists.
Did you just make that up?
I did, and I liked it. Like, it's not fair. It's not fair to black people, and it's not fair to the plethora of people who was in this fight.
Using a lot of my favorite words. Oh my God. Plight is one of my super favorite
words. In undergrad, plight is...
Plight, yo.
It was so bad. You know when you use a word too many times, and then it's like plight on the first line, and plight is directly underneath it. It's like, nah, I got to find another word.
I got to space this out a little more.
And then you put the plight, because then it's not directly underneath each.
Throw a semicolon in there right in the middle.
Hate you.
Instead of an L, you put an uppercase I.
Hate you.
But yeah, like, I remember I researched a whole bunch of, like, dumb stuff because I just, like...
Dumb stuff.
I like knowing stuff.
So, you like being dumb.
Like, I know, like, how, like, nuts and bolts are created through, like, scrap metal. Like, stuff that I could never use. So I was learning about how, like, the bees are dying.
Yes.
And it was an article called The Plight of the Bumblebee. And it's my favorite.
The Plight of the Bumblebee!
It's my favorite article I've ever had to cite. Like, I've never been more happy using APA format than when after I read Plight of the Bumblebee.
I mean, that's also...
If you don't understand that wordplay, like, I'm sorry. I won't explain it, but I feel sorry for you.
I feel bad for you, son? That's what you say?
I got 99 problems, but plight ain't word.
Yo, I'm not. Hold on, y'all. Let me get a little break. My lips get a little chapped. Antoine, you can say something.
I'll give you
the mic for a little bit.
Hey, finally. About time. Time for the Tornese takeover with your boy.
Keep going.
But nah, I really bang with this, Zora. Like, first off.
He just talked mad crap about my PDF links.
No, I banged with Zora. Oh, yeah. I forgot about... It's a 22-year-old who worked for NASA, y'all. She ain't even graduated MIT yet. She only 22. And she's black. She's a woman of color. And she's also has a 5.0 currently.
Happy Black History Month, y'all.
Oh, she in Texas, yo. Chilling. Building spaceships and whatnot.
Meanwhile, I'm here with you.
Bruh, I said something. Who was I talking to? I think I was talking to my boy Joe. I was like, yo, I was asking about one of our mutual friends. He was like, oh, yeah, he teaching in Germany right now. I was like, yo, dude's in Germany, and I ain't even never been to California.
Maybe I should treat you to California, a plane ticket to California.
Yo, I'd appreciate that.
But I think.
I'm going to be going for Christmas, actually.
Okay. Interesting.
Christmas in California.
I think this leads to our next characteristic.
C&C.
I'm not doing this.
No sodas.
I don't. Can someone count the times? How many times I've actually said I'm not doing this? This entire episode, because I'm not. So this characteristic is my favorite. It's called the juke.
Hey.
And it just as soon as I was rereading this,
Chicago,
right?
Chicago, stand up.
Because the first thing I thought about was Chance the Rapper Juke Jam.
Yes.
And so I stopped in my reading and I had to play Juke Jam for the culture.
No, that's not even what you want to play. It's a song off Acid Rap. Actually, it's a song off his mixtape before Acid Rap 10 Day that got like the juke. Uh-huh. Like, he got a whole little like juke beat. That John is lit. And he plays it at the end of Acid Rap. He listens to like all the way at the end when he's going through like good ass job and like all that stuff like that. Like, you'll hear it in the background. It's lit.
Well,
so listen to Acid Rap again.
So the
I think I'm gonna see Chance the Rapper again though. I think I'm gonna see him in Juke.
So the Juke, y'all, the Juke. I don't know how to say this. Okay.
Try your best.
I'm going to. The most vital part of a black millennial in this day and age is the turn up. Let me explain.
Ooh, okay.
Turn ups are extremely therapeutic.
True.
They allow you to let your hair down. You get to network and connect with different people. And if you're turning up correctly, you've already got a whole bunch of people positive people on your team from a simple turn up. And it allows you, it's almost equivalent to like a vacation break, right?
It's like Rumspringer.
And so think about, this article was written in the 1934 around.
That's a good year.
Right, it was. So in the 30s, of course, we were still going through Renaissance areas and eras.
I thought you were shaking your head.
No, I was breathing.
I was making a sigh. Like, when are we? What decade are we not going through something?
You're right. So let's see. 20s to about 40s was like Renaissance, right? Yeah. And then like 60s, of course, obviously is.
Skip the 50s. Ain't nothing happy happened in the 50s. No. What happened in the 50s?
Like,
I'm not really a history buff like that. Now, that's something I don't know. I don't know history or geography. But I know pretty much.
I'm not even going to show my ignorance with this. But something did happen in the 50s. Was it the Great Depression?
No, that's early.
That's earlier.
Yeah, that's earlier.
The New Deal is when?
Yeah, I think you're too far ahead.
My bad. Okay. So then it was the 60s. The 70s was the 70s. The 80s.
The 70s were the 70s.
The 80s were Beat Street. Like, dun, 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 dun. I always told people that if I ever want to live in a different era, it would be in the 80s. Then the 90s was when your girl was born.
90s, a star.
And
born.
Jersey dresses were in. Jay-Z
Jersey
and Maya had
were
good.
Not in the 90s.
They were not in the 90s?
That's 2000, fam. That's 2000.
Jersey dresses came in 2000.
2000s.
Not the 99s and the 98s.
No, no.
Oh,
you
because
think about
Felix,
Cash Money taking over for the 99
no,
and
no,
the 2000.
No. Now I'm thinking about, okay, so I'm thinking about Felix, FUBU, Rockaware.
Yes,
that's
cool
90s.
G.
That's definitely 90s.
Cool G is 90s okay. For real. Remember that store in Philly went to that had the Cool G sweaters? And they were selling for like Cool G price, not like, this is ironic that I'm wearing this price.
And it was 2011.
Yeah, like
2011.
I'm not paying $200 for a Coogee. It's not the 90s.
But one thing that we can applaud the 90s for is the fact that black cooperative economics was at its highest. Like black entrepreneurship. People were actually, bruh, do you remember Meskene? Meskene was right out of Camden, New Jersey.
Who?
The Meskene building is still in Camden, New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
Meskene was like it. And then, of course, 2000s came around. And we was shaking our behinds to Cash Money.
They took over.
For the 99s and the 2000s. Just the 2000s, though. And then.
No, all of the 2000s. It was an S at the end. So they still taking over now. As long as it's 2000 and something, Cash Money taking over.
I think anytime that song plays in a club, like, it's almost like people are trying to find their highest ground to, like. So people are climbing up walls, like everyone becomes like superheroes. Like one is Spider-Man, one is like railing across the actual room. Like it gets real.
What clubs do you go to that got all this?
Circus de Olay, all right? It get real. You can't tell me that if you've ever been in a bathroom, ladies, tell me the truth. If you ever been in a bathroom and you heard doom, 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 that you and your girls did not run out of the bathroom to go ahead and do what you gotta do on the dance floor.
Do what you gotta do. You know what my new goal is?
What?
My new goal is to live to 2099. So when I hear Cash Money taking over for the 99 and the 2000, it'll be 2099.
And then you ain't finna die in 3000 because you're not even gonna, you're gonna be a shrimp.
All I have to do is hear that line. In
that's it? And you
gonna
resurrect.
And then I'm done.
That's it?
I'll turn to dust.
Like God. Michael Jackson does when he turns. And he just dissipates.
No, I think God gonna treat me like Elijah. He's gonna send down a chariot. You know, I'll just ascend in a chariot of fire after I hear it.
He told you this?
He didn't tell me, but he said he was gonna write me. I'm still waiting on the letter. I changed my address, though, so that could be something.
Well, God is very just.
I'm
letting you know that. He's a just man. A just man. So if you alive, I might just be alive. We might just still keep rocking with Book Club and
Dude. At the same time?
Right.
I just want to let you know, I'm dead. After the song goes off, like, don't think we got plans afterwards.
We not talking about it. That's it. After the song
reaches. I might not make it through the song. All I need to do is hear that intro. Working with the man, yeah. I'm like, oh, that's it. That's all I need.
I lived a good one. Boom. So the juke, again, like, think about. Like, without turn-up, again, and without expression, and without, like, these different forms of the ways that we interact, like, through dancing and through music and through, like, I don't know, cool, dope, like, hair. Open mic. No, this is not part of the juke.
I'm sorry. We just expressed it so many different ways. I'm sorry.
Right, but...
I'm sorry. I get excited.
No, you raise a really good question. You raise a really good one. Hold on. Please hold while the Nextel subscriber you are trying to reach is located.
What?
Do you remember that? Do you remember
that? I remember people had you listening to Beethoven while they answered. Like, you don't listen to Beethoven.
I put down on my notes, black women hair braiding, when we were talking about asymmetry. And how, like, cornrows, like, no one really talks about, like, almost, like, the science or, like, the politics of, like, cornrows and, like, the types of designs.
Politics of cornrows. So I think that's not an essay by Sindel Harris.
I mean, that should be coming up along with the fact that, like, I want to talk about this, like, social concept of at night putting on a bonnet. And men putting on do-rags at night to go to sleep. Like, hey, there's so much. I shouldn't say this on air because if I find out that somebody write this article, I'm finna collect my dollars on y'all. I'm finna collect them dollars on y'all because this is my idea. It's my money and I need it now. No, but I truly feel like no one really talks about, like, cornrows and, like, the experience. Okay, so Sunday nights... Like, right before school, your mom is calling you downstairs because she got the Blue Magic grease and the wide-tooth comb.
Blue Magic.
Am I right or am I wrong?
You're right.
And then...
Maybe a rat tail comb.
Right. And then she either has one or two things. The barrette box or the beads.
Either way, you know what she do got? An attitude. Right. Ain't never seen no mom smile while doing their daughter hair on a Sunday night.
And then you got the little chair, and you sit right underneath your mom, and it's a whole process. And it's not so much of a process, but, like, you get to talk, and you guys kind of sort of, like, share sometimes, actually. Because if your mom got attitude, she kind of sort of quiet the whole time. But my mom used to encourage me on Sundays, and she used to do stuff like read spelling words to me. And this was our time to catch up during, like, the weekend. Like, okay, this is your, like, mental moment to settle down because I'm doing your hair for the week on end, right? And then Friday night, Saturday morning, you get up, take out the braids so I can wash your hair. You go through that whole thing over and over again. And again, it's just like this whole experience. But I think, I don't know why we went back to asymmetry. But yeah, the juke. So the juke just plays onto just this idea that turnips are necessary. They are necessary. If not turnips, social events. We are social people. We like to talk. We like to storytell. We like to express ourselves in the way that we dress, in the way that we do things. And the juke is basically the hub of all of that. It brings everybody together. It's the commonplace. You know what else is a form of juke? The church. A church and...
Yeah.
Bruh, Easter Sunday. If you ain't come to church on Easter Sunday...
Ladies, if you don't got a hat that got at least 5 feathers, stay home.
Basically. And fellas, if you don't have a multicolored tuxedo...
If you don't got a 4-piece, fam...
A oversized 4-piece.
If your coat...
With the faders, because you don't got the gaiters. We got an issue. Don't come to church.
Bangs with
don't
you.
Come to church. And that's... But that's
if
a joke.
If your tie, your blazer, your shirt, and your pocket square ain't the same color orange, then you're not ready to receive the word.
Of the Lord.
Of the Lord.
Of the Lord. So, again, it's a gathering place. It's some cool fun.
I see the turn up as, like, a purge of stressors.
Okay.
So, like, I know, like, the dance floor is one place that, like, I don't know. I'm carefree. Like, that's one place I know that, like, I am safe. Like, okay. Nothing bad happens on the dance floor.
That's not true, as
no
we know. Because
no,
when like Nuck If You Buck come on.
Oh, Nuck. See, that's not the dance floor's fault. That's Nuck If You Buck's fault. No one's in charge of Nuck If You Buck. That's no one's job.
But to DJ.
No, that's no one's job.
If you put on
you
Nuck If You
have to play it.
So then the juke
the
no longer becomes
I
a safe place.
A riot in Philadelphia. So me and my friends go to this spot called the 700. And it's in Northern Liberties in Philly. So when you go in upstairs, it looks like you go into someone's attic.
Okay.
They got like the wallpaper, they got pictures and stuff. And it looks like an attic party.
Okay. So I don't trust attic parties like I don't trust basement parties. But, yeah, but keep
it's, going. It's like hipster white people mostly.
I guess. Did they play Knock If You Fucking There?
Yo, so if the DJ is right, like if, that night the DJ was crazy good. Like we was in there having it. It was me, Gary, and Bruce. We was in there having it. So Knock If You Buck comes on. So I start punching my hand. You know, actually. What happened was the DJ was so good, I thought he was going to play Knock If You Buck next because he had already played Swaxer. So I'm like, you got to play both.
Side note, the equivalent to punching your hand during Knock If You Buck is the equivalent to doing the hand clap for A Bay Bay Hurricane Chris. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Of course, You have to.
Tell me if I'm wrong.
That's like not crossing your feet when you hear lip gloss. Like, when the beat drop, you got to do the crisscross. You got to crisscross. Like.
Yo, what's our time? Keep going. Keep going with your story. And then we'll
So, I'm punching my hand, hoping that Knock If You Buck comes on, my G. When I say this white dude, who, like, whenever me and my G's go out.
G's.
I didn't know. I was trying to say what I was originally going to say. Okay. So, I had to find a sentence. Me and my friends go out.
My comrades.
Like, we could dance. Like, we dance for real. So it's always the white people who are like, oh, let me just try to, like, steal some of their coolness. Like the aliens from Space Jam. Like, you can't get it like that, Playboy. You got to work for this. You got to earn this at Sweet 16s. Come on now.
Oh, my God.
So I'm punching my hand, and he sees that and is like, yo, that must be the thing to do. So he starts. But he's hyper than me. And so Bruce... looks, my back is turned. I'm trying to get, like, now at this point, Knock If You Buck is on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm punching my hand. My dude, I turn around, and this white dude is so excited. And I'm like, yo, you don't know what that means. Like, you don't know that, like, that, this is a metaphor for, like, for pain, my G. Like, right. This is letting you know that, like, if a fight breaks out because of this song,
I warmed
my
up.
Fist is already tenderized.
I'm warmed up.
It's everyone at the same time. It's the equivalent of sitting at a dinner table, like a mafia dinner table, and everyone just putting their guns on the table. Like, just so you know, anybody could get it. And he didn't know that. So if he would have got swung on, that would have been on him. I would have slept peacefully that night. Maybe a little better. Who's to say?
This also plays into the last characteristic, dialect. Can you imagine sitting here and being like super formal the entire podcast?
Nah, that'd be mad annoying.
I don't even think we'll be connected to the people. And that's what dialect does. It connects us to people. Because we all pretty much. And Zora makes this notion that like the Southerner wouldn't have words like ain't if it wasn't for black people who soften words. They don't have, they not necessarily brought the African language, whatever that means, to like the Americas, but they did soften language. They do have dialect that now everyone says, and without them, it wouldn't be true. So.
You're welcome, Southerners.
And Northerners,
else we did for you.
And Northeasterners, and Midwesterns, and the rest
You're
of y'all.
You're welcome, America. You get to say eight, cause us.
So, all in all, do you like how somehow, some way, I morphed Biko and Zora Neale Hurston together?
Yeah, I liked it. It was flawless.
Yeah, thanks. So, I think I'm really glad that you guys both. You read both of the passages. I told y'all that these are some of my favorite essays. And, you know, as per usual, tell us what you think. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you didn't like. And this just basically lets us know from two different people from two different parts of the world that we have a blueprint for our liberation. And we are genetically built for our expression in whatever ways they come out.
Yeah, we're built to survive. That's it. Like
through different forms
We are the basement. We are the safe zone. We are no matter what it is. Like whatever is built to keep you safe. That's we are mama's love. Black is mama's love.
We're gonna close off on that because that was real powerful. So, the next time that we will meet, what day is it?
This comes out on the 12th.
Right.
And then the next one will come out 14 days. No, it can't come out 14 days later because 14 plus 12 is 30.
Wait, this says, no. Yeah, the 26th. 26. Oh, the 26th.
I'm a math teacher. Thanks.
So February 26th is when you guys will hear the second part, where we are cracking the codes of James Baldwin, A Notes of a Native Son, and my favorite, June Jordan. True. Where is the love?
No worries. So, and if we miss any important topics, we recorded this on the 3rd. So, like, if anything crazy pop up, I want you to know that we're not ignoring it.
I mean, we didn't talk about Beyonce being pregnant with twins
on
the year of our Lord and Savior 2017. But we'll talk about that later. We'll talk about that in 2 weeks. So, bye, everyone. It's been real. Do your little closing.
I'm sorry. I love you. God loves you. Love yourself. Man, am I doing?
Peace be with you all.